Well, good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Very nice to have you with us. And it's another beautiful day. It's Monday, the 9th of July, and we welcome you to our program. Quick thank you to the folks at Tanglewood for a lovely broadcast on Friday. We had a blast and an awful lot of fun at Tanglewood. We'll be back there the 17th of August, whatever that Friday is. We'll be there talk about we're there for the wind-up of the season, and we'll be there for as they get ready to wind down, and also about the big Bernstein
to you
centennial that will be happening there, and we'll be talking about that as well. So we thank our friends at Tanglewood as always.
We do.
Yes. All right, Alan Chartok is here. Good morning, Alan. How are you?
Yo.
Excellent. Good to see you. Good to hear you. Even though you have a little bit of a cold, well, hopefully you'll get over that.
I have a little horse down there.
Communications consultant Joe Bonilla is here. Good morning, Joe.
Good morning, Joe. How are you?
I'm fine. Thank you. Good to see you. Our good friend Barry Lewis is here. He's the executive editor of the Times Herald Record. Good morning, Barry.
Good morning, Joe. How are you?
Thank you. By the way, Joe is filling in for Libby Post, who is out for a couple days. So thank you for filling in. We appreciate that.
Absolutely.
Been doing some last-minute duty there. And, hey, we got the new kid on the block. We're excited. He is a former New York State senator. What? And a SUNY New Paltz communications professor. Terry Gibson is with us. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Very good. Thanks so much for having me.
Anybody ever tell you look a lot like Mitt Romney?
I've heard that before, but... beyond the looks, there's really nothing in common. Absolutely nothing, really.
So, so if I have the story right, and correct me if I'm wrong, if I have the story right, you're running for governor in the primary against Governor Cuomo.
I was.
You were.
Right.
And then Cynthia Nixon got in the race.
That's
right. But you gave up. And then during your concession or getting out, you said, I want to spend more time on the WAMC panel. Is that the way this
That's
story goes?
That's exactly the way it was. You know, somebody actually
that
read
story.
That statement, that very last line that I worked
right.
in there. Well, you know, WAMC has been a part of my life for many, many, many years. In fact, I credit it with getting involved in politics, to be honest with you.
Really?
Absolutely. Yes,
you also credit it with marrying your wife, your lovely wife?
Well, we were very much already together long before we met WAMC, but it does play a big role in our life. But you know what? Why not? Let's give it that credit as well.
Good to have you aboard.
Thanks.
Thank you very much. Welcome. We are very happy to have you here. So let's get to the stories of the day and find out what is happening in the world. Of course, it is... Why does it seem like a reality show? Oh, right. I remember. There will be a Supreme Court nominee announced tonight at 9 o'clock. We will be running that live here on WAMC. But it is like an episode of The Apprentice. We're going to see who gets voted off the island. And the last person left sitting in the chair will be the nominee for the Supreme Court. President Trump said he was close to choosing a Supreme Court nominee Sunday after a weekend at his New Jersey golf club evaluating four leading candidates and mulling the likely response of key senators and his core supporters to each prospect, according to White House officials and Trump advisors involved in the decisions. Over rounds of golf with friends, meals with family, and a flurry of phone calls, Trump remained coy about his final decision, which is expected to be announced Monday evening from among the four federal judges atop his list, Brett Kavanaugh, Thomas Hardiman, Raymond Kethledge, and Amy Coney Barrett.
So Joe, does on the eighth green, does he turn to Sean Hannity and say, Sean, do I go with the wood or do I pick Thomas Hardiman?
I knew you were
right.
going to say that.
Right.
I could slice it, but Barrett seems like a choice that my sister wanted. So should I go there? And I'm only inches from the green, so Kavanaugh seems like the right choice.
You left him speechless.
You wish it were a joke, although it
could have played itself out that way.
It could have been exactly what happened.
It could be an episode of The Bachelor tonight with the rose.
It seems as though, at least the press indications are, that Hardiman is the top prospect.
We would think, but we would think that's the case, except he may want to prove everybody wrong that he's not this terrible misogynist we all know he is. And he picks the woman for exactly that reason.
And he had said earlier on that he did want to, that he was very keen on.
But does he go for the woman for that, or does he go for the woman because that's the person who may have the toughest time getting the nomination, and so to clear the Senate? And so he says, going again with his gut, and I'll go opposite of what everyone else says, and I'm going to choose her because my gut tells me she's the person.
Certainly possible. I just wanted to say that I know we're joking around, and that includes me, but there is nothing funny about this one. This is the future of the United States right here.
For the next 40, 50 years, and this is why elections
this
matter.
This is the future of the United States, and these people are going to ruin this country. And anybody who tells you that it isn't a matter of, you know, Republicans versus Democrats or conservatives versus liberals, and that it's just the law, baloney. These people are agents of this president and of this, I think, pre-fascist or fascist philosophy.
Well, certainly, I think the issue right here, and Alan's absolutely correct right there. I mean, this is a generational impact in terms of what we're seeing today. And when we look at this, you know, charade, this circus at 9 o'clock about an appointment that really has a far-reaching impact in terms of American life, really, I'm looking at this as, yes, this is the second potential Trump pick. Let's see, you know, how, you know, this goes through in terms of the Senate. But, you know, God forbid he gets a third. And that's really the fear, because if we look at the roadmap of where we got with Gorsuch and now whoever he picks tonight, what happens if, let's say, a Stephen Breyer or Ruth Bader Ginsburg, this, you know, they pass away or something else happens to them? What's the roadmap there? And if that happens before 2020, we're in some real serious trouble.
I think the roadmap is one of these four that we just mentioned. There's obviously this list that's been looked at and vetted by all the various conservative organizations like the Heritage Foundation and the Federalist Society. These are the people that he said he would choose from before he was elected. That's how he got the base support.
Right.
So I think it's going to be one of these. And if there is the opportunity, the unfortunate opportunity for a third, it will come from this list as well. I think right now, I would suspect that he's looking at how smooth his last pick went through the system. I think he liked how that worked. It had very little pushback on it. And I think he's going to look for something that happens just as smoothly. And that's why I do think Hardeman is probably at the top of the list.
But the big difference, though, is that, you know, when Gorsuch was going through, we didn't have a midterm election right on basically the heels of this. So that's the other side.
And yet, you're right. But yet, let's take a look and see what happened there. A lot of people said at the time, well, you know, this one replaces another conservative, so I guess we don't have to fight that hard. But the next one we're really going to fight on. I sure hope Chuck Schumer, Nancy Pelosi, and the rest of those folks are up to this task, because this needs to be a real fight. Remember, it's 50-50. McCain doesn't vote, apparently, so that makes it 50-50. And the way that I'm looking at it, unless the Republicans can find a couple of Democrats, they're in trouble.
But Al, do you really think, maybe it's an extra day, but one of these four is going to get the nod from the Senate? I mean, it may take a little longer, but this is not a question of that the Democrats will be able to preempt this through even the midterms. One of these four is going to get, get the nod.
We should note that in the phone call that the president had with Mitch McConnell on Friday, he did not push any one choice, but said that Hardeman and Kethledge could fare very well in the Senate because of their reputations and records and were not as politically charged as others on the president's short list of nominees. But as you say, you still have a backup. If one doesn't go, you have the other.
You know, Joe, I think that we have to quote Winston Churchill here and say, fight them on the beaches. I mean, I don't think that we can say, oh, well, these are all four poison, but these two are less poison than the other two. I think this has
to be... Well, that's what Mitch McConnell was saying.
I know, but I know that joke, but this has to be a major fight.
But even him saying that those two are less politically charged makes them now more politically charged, because then they're now at the forefront.
Well, that's true. Yeah. That's very true.
It's going to be a fight, certainly, no matter who is chosen. But I think what the real story here very soon is going to be is how the Democrats go about handling this fight. And you're right. We're going to see if Schumer and Pelosi are up to this. But how they go about it and how the Democratic Party goes about it, I think, is critically important. They have a real choice to make. Obviously, they have to fight. They just have limited tools about how to go about doing that. But the bigger issue here is that we do have midterm elections coming up, which is really where the Democrats have a major opportunity to actually take back power and begin to turn things around. And if this fight begins to divide the Democratic Party more than it's already divided and somehow create less enthusiasm about getting Democrats elected, then they're in even bigger trouble. So I think there's a fine line here about how far do you go with this fight.
Yeah. Best Democrats can really hope for is to have somebody who, through the vetting process, they're able to kind of get an understanding as to where they may go, although no nominee is going to outright say, I'm going to vote this way.
Right.
And nor would anybody really expect them to.
I do not agree with you. I think these guys are the devil.
But it's truly the devil in the details, though, Alan. I mean, yeah. one of these devils is going to be the person. So is it the lesser devil? How do you stop it?
We'll take a step back. Is Susan Collins, who has made it clear she won't vote for anybody who will deal with abortion negatively? Is she going to keep her word this time, which she hasn't in the past?
No.
And none of them are going to say specifically. No. So they're going to look at their background on how they voted.
Now, Susan Collins does not have a history of keeping her word on things like this.
That's right.
I don't think you can count on any of these Republicans not supporting any of these candidates, unless during the confirmation hearing something comes out. And you can bet right now, just as the conservative groups have worked very hard to try to find justices that can pass the test, there are liberal organizations that are ready to jump as soon as this person is selected with all kinds of things they found in the opposition research. So something could come up, but it's unlikely. There just aren't many tools available to stop
this. Which might make Hardiman at this point, the logical choice, having been the runner-up to Gorsuch, the person who probably was the most vetted of the three others. For whatever reason, it seems as though people are just simply enamored by the fact that this man used to be a taxi cab driver.
Right.
For anybody who's ever taken a taxi cab in New York City, I really don't know if that is a qualification
we want in
our Supreme Court justice.
Michael Cohen was also a cab.
He was a cab owner.
Which would actually make it bigger, so he would then be the Chief Justice.
More qualified.
Yes, more qualified.
Gotcha.
But if you look at the tools that they have to stop this, I mean, really trying to persuade Republicans to come one side is definitely one and probably the most viable they have, but still close to impossible. There's the example of what happened at the Texas state legislature where they all just left town to avoid a vote. I mean, you could try to do something
These Republicans are not profiles in courage. These people are not, with a 90% Trump's approval rating by Republicans, these folks have repeatedly shown that they are not going to step up and do anything to risk having the wrath of Donald's tweet.
And yet, every once in a while in life, the unexpected happens. Somebody wakes up in the morning and says, I'm not going to do this. I'm not going to go down in history as somebody who has ruined this country.
We haven't seen it in 2 years, except for the folks who have said they're leaving.
You know what? Takes time.
But let's not forget, we still have to keep Democrats in line. So you have at least 3 to 4 Democrats. You have Manchin, you have Heitkamp, you have Donnelly,
absolutely,
and even, you know, Doug Jones, you know, being a real, basically a Democrat in red country, Alabama. You know, how will they vote? Yeah, and have we really even seen any sort of insight in terms of like what their thought process would be?
Well, this is where these Democrats who are in these swing districts are going to have to make a real choice. Are they going to put themselves first? Are they going to put the nation first?
Well, that's also true of some Republicans.
It is very much true. But you're right. The Democrats not only have to try to persuade some Republicans to come on their side, at least one, if not two, they've also got to keep their caucus in line as well.
Right.
And remember, their caucus isn't made up completely of Democrats either. There's two independents as well.
Right.
Alan, is there also the concern that if the president goes with someone who is really very conservative and would move to stop Roe v. Wade, that the general Republican population would then be concerned at the midterms? Because we know that most Americans, Republican and Democrat, do not want to see Roe v. Wade go away. And this could be that backlash. And there's that calculation in the mix as well, too, that as with what George Bush did, you don't go with the super conservative who's guaranteed to overthrow Roe v. Wade.
One of whom is a George Bush
Well, this is a great opportunity for the Democratic leadership to try to rally the base and use this as a way to get the vote out for the midterms, which really is what the ultimate fight is about. If they can't do that, then
There's been so many of these opportunities where you would say, okay, this would be a reason, this would be a reason.
Well, this gets into a bigger discussion, which is the Democratic Party has really done a fairly horrible job over the last decade of able to organize a base and get serious about winning elections. And we'll probably talk about this today, but this is why the leadership of the party is in question, leadership of the House is in question, and the future of the Democratic Party is in question. So this fight is really the last chance leadership has to show that they're capable of bringing a party together and doing something productive.
We only got a minute, but I wanted to ask you really quickly. You teach at New Paltz. I did for a long time.
Yes.
What do the kids think about this, if at all?
They do think about this, and we talk a lot about politics in class because it's obviously part of the communications process. It's a very liberal college, so most of the students I come in contact with really want to see something done to fight Trump.
But they're willing to go out and vote?
They definitely are very engaged. Whether they actually vote or not, I don't know, but they do talk a lot about it. They do a lot of voter registration drives. They're very active. I'm actually very impressed with the students that I have and their engagement in politics.
We are going to take a break. When we come back, we will continue our conversation. We welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org is how you write to us. It's very simple. Panel at WAMC.org. We just ask that you keep them short, one to a customer, and take a look, read them over a little bit before you send them out so we can make sure that there's a verb in there and all that good stuff. We will continue our conversation on the Roundtable Panel right after this. Well, good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Terry Gibson is here. We also have Barry Lewis, Joe Bonilla, and Alan Chartok, who has some letters for us. We'll start there, and then we'll move on through some other topics as well.
Thanks. John writes, Supreme Court pageant. At 9 o'clock tonight, I'll be ignoring this episode of the Trump Circus. Instead, I will be watching the New York Mets game. Anyone who follows both baseball and politics will perceive which I find more painful and how painful this nomination really will be. And that's John from Half Moon.
As a Mets fan, I don't know what is made for a more disgusting summer, the play of the Mets or what's going on in Washington.
Yeah,
it's close.
I mean, one's scarier than the other.
Let me help you with that. What's going on in Washington is a lot worse than what's going on with the Mets.
What's going on in Washington is going to be with us for decades to come, and you're talking about just one or two baseball games.
We're talking about whether we have global warming.
There's really no comparison at all.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Barry, it's just a year of rebuilding.
I know, but the Mets were
like
also
a century
shut
of rebuilding, okay? Not a year of rebuilding.
They've been rebuilding.
I am so old that I remember sitting there with my father as the ball went through Marv Thornberry's legs, laughing and slapping his thigh, and 1969 comes along, and all is well.
We have 2 years in which we can gloat.
Yeah. All right. Mike says, is the emperor wearing any clothes? The Donald was boasting about the nuclear threat from Korea is over and his summit with Kim in Singapore. Now the North Koreans are accusing the U.S. of using gangster-like tactics. In their meeting with Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, Pompeo had only positive things to say about the meeting. I'm reminded of the Hans Christian Andersen story, The Emperor's New Clothes. Mommy, Daddy, the emperor isn't wearing any clothes. That's a great deal maker. Trump is a NATO person. No action, talk only. That's from Mike in Glens Falls. And Heather says, my news sources are limited. Mostly I listen to WAMC. But I've noticed that anytime a Republican is interviewed about the Supreme Court nominee, he or she speaks in soothing terms regarding Roe versus Wade, saying it is settled law and that the precedent is not in danger of being overturned. Of course, this is a fairy tale. Would love to hear the panel's observations regarding the script, though.
That does seem to be the line now, settled law that you've been seeing. I know definitely Susan Collins mentioned that when she's been interviewed about that and other Republicans, but that seems to be the going line.
What's that now?
Settled law.
Settled law.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought you said subtle law.
No. She subtly says it.
But here's the deal. They are going to kill Roe versus Wade one way or the other. It's going to be either that they overturn it or they just take a little bit off each time.
But what's also important is not to put all the eggs in that basket. I mean, that is a very important decision, and certainly I'm not diminishing it in any way. But there are huge issues that are going to be impacted by this court. I mean, just during the election when we were thinking there could be a more liberal court of bringing back and actually overturning Citizens United,
sure.
Things like that. So that now things like that are now with sure. us for a very, very long right. time.
Healthcare,
so
immigration.
Healthcare, exactly. These are issues, and not to mention immigration.
Yeah.
Yes, certainly abortion is a key issue, and it always will be. But with a conservative court that, as noted earlier on the panel, that they could be with us for 30, 40, 50 years, there's a lot of other issues that are going to be affected.
The only solace in any of this is the idea that sometimes the person who gets on is not necessarily the person who people think they are. And there has been those folks. I know you're wishing, but
not recently.
Yeah, not
recently.
Suitor maybe is the last example of
yeah.
that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I do think the Roe v. Wade fight is one worth fighting, and we do need to do everything we can to keep it from being overturned. But I think, again, back to the fight itself and how the Democrats handle it, if they're going to make it all about Roe, it could be problematic. We need to make sure that the Democratic base remembers that there are many, many other things at stake as well, all just as important as Joe mentioned. So I do have concerns that if you look at polling about how abortion plays to the Democratic base, you get different results on it depending on how you ask the question. When you talk about just preserving a woman's right to choose, you have a large favorability of that among Democrats. When you just start talking about abortion in general, it gets a little more difficult. So
why is that?
Well, because nobody likes to talk about abortion. You know, nobody wants to think about it, talk about it, really talk about the details of it. But when you just strictly talk about making sure that a woman has the right to make that decision, that's different because you're just talking about a right. You're not getting into the details.
Right. Which,
it's a tricky issue. It hasn't really, based on my research and my experience, it has limits as to how much power it really has in getting out the vote. People's positions on abortion are pretty set. There's not a lot of middle ground there. However, on healthcare, environment, these are things that people do very much get excited about, and we'll get them out to the polls.
Okay, here comes a letter from regular letter writer Rocco, who says Supreme Court pick. No person who is under investigation should be able to pick the judge who would preside in his prosecution since he be found guilty of high crimes. Let's not forget the McConnell rule, which, if not enforced, makes the previous appointment of Gorsuch highly questionable.
Yeah, I think the Democrats can try this, but I don't see it going very far. I mean, they have just so little power. They have basically no power. They're so outnumbered.
We got to fight like hell. I mean, you know, the other day I got severely criticized, and appropriately so, I thought, for saying that, you know, people shouldn't break the law in their protesting. I was thinking of them and being, you know, protecting them. And I got three or four letters which said, you know, come on now, Alan, anything is justified in all of this. So when you look at climate change and you look at abortion and you look at all of these things, the question is, and I'm beginning to change my mind on this, maybe it is appropriate to take that extra step.
I also don't think anything goes no matter what.
It shouldn't be a free-for-all.
No, and there are laws and there are, you know, rules and— You know, just as the woman, you know, climbing up the Statue of Liberty, the other folks there protested within her group, and she decided to take it upon herself.
But she got every headline in the United States, they didn't.
Yeah.
She's also not an elected official. I mean, there's a difference in how you go about conducting yourself as an elected official versus being an activist.
Oh, I don't know, Gary. I know that.
Are you suggesting that officials in Washington break the law this time? Or are you suggesting?
Well, I'll tell you, I know people I respect very much in the New York State Legislature, for example, who've gotten arrested over the years doing protests. I believe.
I would argue that enough people in the New York State Legislature have not been arrested.
Yeah, I think right. The problem is too many people in the New York State Legislature have been arrested.
There have been many trials.
If you want to take that detour, we can go there.
Even as we speak.
Cheap shot, but you make a very good point.
All right, let's move on to other topics. And Terry mentioned this earlier, but article in the New York Times today about the House leadership. And this is a struggle, as this article in the Times today points out, both Republicans and Democrats. These are we know that Paul Ryan is stepping down. We know that if the Democrats were to take control in November, that I think we know this, there would probably be a fight between Nancy Pelosi and someone else.
Someone else, right.
And so now the House returns from its July 4th recess in a state of remarkable uncertainty, with both Democrats and Republicans facing open questions about their leaders' futures, and neither party sure about which will be in control after November's elections. Brian Higgins is a Democrat from New York who says sometimes things have to be torn down before they can be built back up. And I think we are in a tearing down phase, at least in the House. For Democrats, the loss in a primary last month of a popular lawmaker seen as a potential House Speaker has injected new complications into an inevitable and messy struggle over control of the caucus.
Not only that, Joe, but Ocasio-Cortez, if I'm pronouncing that correctly.
Alexandria.
Yes, that's the last name is
right.
Hyphen,
yeah,
hyphen.
Right.
Is already making... She is so hot in terms of her political potential that she is endorsing people all over the United States in
yes.
her own. That's pretty extraordinary, isn't it?
Everything about her race and her story is extraordinary. And I think that she, along with many, many other people like her, are the new face of the Democratic Party. And they are quickly going to be moving into positions where their voice matters and their power matters. And I think that the time of the old school Nancy Pelosi's, even Chuck Schumer, is nearing an end.
Well, the interesting thing about Ocasio-Cortez to me is I don't think she won exclusively on being a progressive. A lot of people are putting it that way. I think she won because she was because of what we would only call identity politics. People tend to vote for people like themselves.
Right.
And I think that's probably the reason. So we'll have to see, based on other elections, whether it's progressivism or the fact that people, you know, are voting for people who are like themselves.
Well, I think she also won because she was supported by a huge grassroots movement. The Democratic Party's lack of leadership over the last few decades has really left a vacuum to be filled. And finally, after Donald Trump's election, these individual groups are stepping up to organize and do what the party hasn't done. And that's what's getting these people elected. And that's what the new leadership is going to come out of.
Well, let's talk about the new leadership, because, you know, you have Pelosi, you know, Steny Hoyer and Jim Clyburn. They're all in their late 70s. And then the number four was Joe Crowley, who was a kid at 56. And now with Crowley out, who will actually step up to the base? When you saw the Republicans about 10 years ago, they had this Young Guns program, which was the rise of Paul Ryan and Eric Cantor and Kevin McCarthy.
And that certainly worked out.
And that worked out well for them. So can the Democrats do the same thing?
Well, does Pelosi and Hoyer have the courage to say, for the betterment of the country and the party, we will step down?
No.
And that's the problem.
I mean, Pelosi
Pelosi cares about Pelosi. She doesn't care about the Democratic Party. She doesn't care about, you know, because if she did, she would realize she knows that she is not the future of the party.
But you know, on the congressional corner, which I interview all of these congresspeople, the Democrats to a person say that Pelosi is a wonderful leader, a wonderful woman, and that we don't understand, for those of us who have our doubts, about all of this, because she's a terrific leader and that they're going to stick with her.
Well, that's party politics.
Yeah.
That's members supporting the
leader. Republicans
also
say Ryan's
knowing that
a
she's
great
listening
leader.
And knowing that you know, they need yeah. things from her for their own
right.
districts, so they're not prepared to
well,
go up against her.
Right.
But I think that first, we don't want to get ahead of ourselves. Democrats first have to win in the midterms. And then we see where we are and we see who the nominees could be to take over the leadership. If they don't win a significant amount of seats, certainly if they don't get back in the majority, then I think this discussion goes in a very different direction.
Yeah. And to Joe's point, I mean, so that's the Democratic side. On the Republican side, you probably have McCarthy, which isn't a clear shot
right.
Either. You have Jim Jordan of Ohio, although he has trouble now with allegations about not reporting sexual
you might say.
Abuse as a wrestling coach at Ohio State University.
And more of those guys keep coming forward.
And then Steve Scalise, who is now making the rounds on a book tour after the tragedy a year ago of him being shot on the baseball field.
I think as what Republicans have found out, that if when they are in control, that it really doesn't matter who is the leader of the House or the Senate. Trump is the leader of the Republican Party.
Precisely.
And regardless of whatever Paul Ryan, I mean, the reason why Paul Ryan is stepping down is not because he doesn't want to be in politics anymore. He's stepping down because he doesn't have the power anymore, and the Republicans may lose the House. That's why he's stepping down. So it really doesn't matter who is the leader of the Republicans. As long as Trump is president, he is.
Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation. We'll get letters as well. We welcome your thoughts. Panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. Alan Chartok, Joe Bonilla, Barry Lewis, and Terry Gibson on the panel this morning. We welcome your participation. Panel at WAMC.org. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. We welcome your letters panel at WAMC.org. We have fresh letters right off the printer. Alan has them in his hand right now.
Our friend Marty writes, I have little faith that Schumer will lead effective opposition to Trump's Supreme Court nominee. He has proven over the course of the last year and a half that he is simply not up to this fight, and he is out of touch with the base of this party. The Democrats desperately need new and more aggressive leadership. What I don't see in this letter, Marty, is the name of who that is.
I agree with everything he just said.
Yeah. I mean, but the issue is also he doesn't have the tools to really fight. So you're going into a gunfight with a knife.
Well, there's also just the passion that's needed for a fight. And I think that Chuck Schumer, Nancy Pelosi, and all of the old school politicians lack the passion that's now needed.
Yeah. And Brucey says, Dems also have to guard Senate seats. Dems also have to guard Senate seats and try to win a couple. It's a tough and complex path. We need a very smart fight to galvanize voters. P.S. Wow, do I ever want to ditch Mitch?
Just to be clear, it's 26 seats that the Democratic Senate needs to hold on to, plus pick up two more to take the majority. So yeah, it's a lot.
Most people discount the Senate side, although you never know what's going to happen.
Right.
Could be one of those
a wave.
Could be one of those Walter Cronkite nights where the guy says, look at those numbers.
It has happened.
There's plenty of motivation.
It has happened. Yeah. It is doable.
And Mary says, Roe v. Wade. You know, but back to that. If, in fact, he was losing Republican support, the president, I would say, yeah, you know, anything could happen.
But he's
not. He's actually gaining. Okay, so then Mary says, Roe v. Wade. Democrats need to change the state dialogue. It is no longer pro-life and pro-choice. It's pro-life and federally mandated pregnancy. Also, since overturning Roe v. Wade would significantly impact women's lives much more than men's lives, yet pregnancy is the result of both sexes, laws must be changed to enforce dual responsibility. If a woman is denied an abortion, the man responsible for the pregnancy must wear an ankle monitoring device for 9 months, see a probation officer to make sure he is not smoking or drinking, have his pay doc to match the amount of lost wages a woman may incur during pregnancy and child care, accompany a woman to all doctor's appointments, even if it interferes with work schedule, etc. And that's from Mary.
That would never happen because men make laws.
Well, there is that. There is also the idea that...
that's very, very... yeah,
you know, that's perfect. The reality is that more men make laws than women, and so men would never do that.
What about rape, incest, occasional flings where somebody doesn't even know who is responsible for the pregnancy? Look, this is a terrible situation. I consider it at the very top of my list, Roe v. Wade.
We know what women had to go through before Roe v. Wade. We know the embarrassment, the physical and the mental drama and stress, be it wherever you were in this country, and to even consider that we may go back to that period of time is just outrageous. It would be like saying, you know what, slavery, you know, let's rethink that.
Yeah,
you know, there's issues we can go back to, and we know better.
Well, the issue too is, I mean, even with Roe v. Wade, you still have places in the middle of the country where you have armed guards in front of Planned Parenthood.
Or you have such few Planned Parenthood places, right, as we were talking about, where it would be difficult. And there are some Midwest states where, you know, there's one Planned Parenthood place or a place where you could get a safe abortion within 200-300 miles.
Mm. Right.
That's absolutely true. Panel says, Keith, when the Dems get back into power, they should appoint two Supreme Court justices. Go counteract the seats that McConnell stole. I guess it's to counteract the seats that McConnell stole, increased the seats from 9 to 11. They did the same thing about 100 years ago, and that's from Keith.
Oh, good old Congress core packing.
What Roosevelt wanted to do.
Yeah, the Congress can do it. Yeah.
We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org. Moving on to other topics. So we just have a couple minutes before we go over to a break. But probably the story that is really captivating much of the nation, and with good reason, is the story about the mission in the caves. This is an underwater cave rescue that is taking place in Thailand. And what we know as of right now, there are now more children on their way out due to that rescue effort, and this is three more people were rescued. I don't think they're actually out yet. They assume everything's going to be okay, but there are three that they're being rescued right now. Thai officials said the four boys rescued on Sunday were doing well in the hospital. So I believe that brings the number up to seven, right? So six more, correct? Six more in the coach, I believe, that are still there. This is an unbelievable story. Every once in a while we mention this, but if you have trouble visualizing what's going on, the New York Times has a terrific graphic of what the situation is, how the water is coming into the cave because of the monsoon season. The water is rising, and how not only are divers navigating the flooded passages, which in some cases are 3 feet wide, not only are they navigating those to get the children out, but they're also navigating those to get them supplies and oxygen and so forth so that they can, of course, stay alive. But it is a remarkable story, and this just in is the eighth person is out. Four people were extracted from a cave on Monday, so we're now up to eight total. The new extraction run was sped up, according to the search chief, after air tanks were replaced and guide ropes tightened along the long escape route. A low dam built outside the cave was helping to keep water levels down, officials said, aiding the new rescue attempt. And more than half of the trapped soccer team has now been rescued. Thai Navy SEALs said on Facebook have just said that the four survivors were rescued and have been admitted to the hospital.
It's an amazing story. They spoke to some veteran scuba folks who said that they would have a difficult time, that folks who do this for a living, to go 5 hours in these tunnels and in these darkened, unknown conditions, and to ask 11-year-olds who may not even know how to swim to go 5 hours in this is just an amazing story, that they've so far got eight of these youngsters out of there. I mean, 5 hours, and they had to have tanks along the way to refresh.
And a swimmer in front, right, and a swimmer in behind.
Yeah. Well, with all the terrible news that we have in this country and across the world, there's still good people out there trying to basically, you know, take a terrible tragedy like this and actually, you know, make it really a beautiful thing.
All these countries helping out there.
Right.
I mean, a veteran Thai former Navy SEAL died last week in the attempt, which obviously shows just how risky and dangerous this is.
Well, and it also, I mean, a lot has been made about the timing of having the children there for so long, but what this rescue is showing us, and we hope that everyone gets taken out safely, but what the rescue showed is what patience and time can do. If you think about it, and you're allowed to build an infrastructure and to work on a system and get the best and the brightest to work on a way to get in and out of there, this is the result,
right.
And so hopefully it will prove to be a complete success.
It's a great human interest story in a time where we seem to be just completely captivated by the crazy insanity that Donald Trump throws out every day. To look and see human beings really coming together, and addressing humanity at its finest and doing everything they can to work together.
And it's
to help
leading the news. It's the top news story on every station.
Right. And you're right. It's the best. It's really the best of humanity. And if there's a, as you said, if there's a point in time where you need that, you need to show that there's still great and good, this is it.
Well, and to Terry's point, when we come back, we'll talk about the chaos that will be going on as the president takes off for Europe this week and that
between
trip.
The golf match.
And
yeah,
right. we'll see what happens and what comes of that. We'll talk about that. We'll welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org. First, Ray Graff with news. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Terry Gibson is here. We have Barry Lewis, Joe Bonilla, and Alan Chartok, who has letters, and we will start with that and then move on to some other stuff, like the president's trip to Europe.
Okay, and Sharon writes, midterms, good morning, Roundtable. Just a note of caution. With all the optimism around the midterms and electing more progressive Democratic candidates, which could be the face of the new Democratic Party, which I would certainly love, I'm concerned that the surprise nomination of Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez will also galvanize the Republican base to increase their turnout in the midterms. I seriously question the Democrats' ability to capitalize on her momentum. Please remind your listeners to not rely on optimism and get out and vote.
Here, here. Yeah. Well, register the vote and get out the vote. Yeah. Both.
Don't assume anything.
Assume nothing. Okay. Elias writes, Nancy Pelosi has a spotless voting record. She's always stood by consumers, laborers, the poor, and the middle class in battles against Big Pharma, Wall Street, fossil fuel industry, and special interests. Exactly why do you want to get rid of her?
Well, I think voting record is something that's very important, but also in a leadership capacity, you have greater responsibilities than just your own individual voting record. And the Democratic Party, and she is a leader of that party, has failed to galvanize any type of organization that can get people elected consistently. And that's why we are now in this crisis of having Republicans in control of the state governments, of our federal government, and about to appoint a conservative Supreme Court for decades.
And you know, Terry Gibson, I always say that just so anybody will know who you are. The thing of it is that she has been demonized by the Republicans. They've really made a big thing out of her. So is there a point at which, even if you're a good person, even if you're on the right side on all of these issues, for the good of the party in the election, you step aside?
Well, that's the thing. It's longevity. I mean, she's been in there for 15 years, and you look at it, she's been out of the speakership for 10. So, again, you look at this like, you know, you did your time. You were the first woman speaker elected. You are a mark in history, and you've done incredible work for Democrats, but it's time to move aside.
And she is also, and it's maybe not her fault, but she is the lightning rod for Republicans.
My point.
Yeah, and you know, you take the high road and just say, okay, you know, it's been great, but I'm gonna move aside and we'll help with the transition. I mean, her transition is finding someone in, you know, the age of Methuselah. So,
I have a certain amount of objection to that kind of ageist language.
Except that is an issue with some of the younger voters.
Yeah.
Well, I also think that the demonizing of Nancy Pelosi and any other elected official is just part of our culture now, unfortunately. And I think it's become such a standard practice to demonize the opposite party. There'll always be a lightning rod. I think what's more important is that she has not shown the leadership skills that are needed to build a strong and active Democratic Party that can win elections.
Yeah, and when you think about her, and you think about all these terrible things that Trump is doing and has done, is this the person who's really gotten out there and given him hell?
Well, I think that's
now. In the meantime, Maxine Waters comes on and she gives hell, and Pelosi criticizes her.
I think that's what bothers Democrats, is we see Pelosi and Chuck go to the White House and they're sitting in the Oval Office and they're on the couch, and on one hand, conversation and dialogue is good. And yet they leave, and we know what happens then. Trump bashes them. And so the question is, well, how many times do you still have to go back there to the well, because you know what the outcome is going to be?
Because they're trying to play by the old rules. They're trying to play by the old D.C. rules that they were brought up in that no longer exist.
No.
Right. No longer exist.
Yeah, something nice about being invited up to the White House.
Have you been invited?
No. No, and that's a very good point. I mean, there are some people who would actually say, I ain't going.
Yeah.
And again, I think the first time you make that gesture, if you're Pelosi, if you're Schumer, you make that, as you know, a year or 2 years ago,
right.
You know, you need to.
Right.
But you soon realize, you know, as our allies, as we move into the next, you know, as Trudeau and these other allies are realizing, you know, the conversations with him mean absolutely nothing, because, you know, once he leaves you, he then tweets something differently, and it, you know, it's his own, you know, what happened there.
Yeah, but on the other hand, if you don't go, you know what he's going to do? He's going to get on. See, I try to work with these people.
Right. No matter what you do.
Yeah,
you
no
can't
matter
win.
What you do.
Yes, yeah. But on the other hand, Tevye, you, you know, you can only do this for so long.
Yeah.
Well, I think, you know, leadership means more than just going and meeting with the president. It means
right.
more than yes. just a voting record. It means reaching out and building a party that's capable of winning elections to move your agenda forward. You can't do it by yourself. And that's really the way the Democratic Party's operated. They've spent too much time just focusing on individual needs of individual elected officials. The Republican Party has said, you know what? We're going to do it differently. We're going to make sure that we get seats elected at state legislatures, at judgeships, at federal
gerrymander.
Seats.
Right.
And we're going to do everything we can, because right. we understand that power is what matters.
And the great irony is, by the way, it's not just Pelosi and Schumer who leave the White House thinking they've got a deal, and then it's Republicans as well who talk with the president, leave the White House, and then a tweet comes out, and they're caught off guard as
right.
well,
precisely.
Constantly.
I feel strongly, says John, that if the Democrats would capitalize on the issue of eliminating semi-automatic long guns and rekindle the outrage demonstrated by a young after Lakeland, Florida, they will strengthen their base considerably and garner as yet untapped votes of the young folks.
I hope we haven't forgotten that.
No, we shouldn't forget that, because, again, as you know, you had a tremendous outpouring from high school students and college students, again, making their voice heard and capturing them, getting them registered to vote, but then getting them to vote. You know, we need to keep those issues at the forefront.
I was going to say that.
I'm sure you were.
You know, no, I was going to say the last part of it. You know, everybody wants to reward those who did something. And yet, 50% of this country does not vote, who have the possibility to do it. And college students up to now have never been exemplary about going out and doing what they need to do. That's why I asked Terry the question about his students before, because in all my years in the classroom, I used to ask them, who knew their two state legislators? You know, you'd have 100 kids sitting there. Who knows your two state legislators? And don't lie, because I'm going to call on you. And then, you know, nobody knew. And then I would say, what if somebody voted wrong on abortion as you see it? And they would say, we'll throw them out, we'll throw them out. I say, no, you won't, because you don't know them. And you don't vote.
But Alan, it's also, yeah. right, there's a student base. There's also the black base. There's the Hispanic base. There are
sure.
bases that have had plenty of reason now to stand up and say, we need a voice.
Haven't they always had a reason?
Yes. And the frustration thing is they haven't used that power, that voice. And I think we are seeing it in some states. I think we saw it down in Georgia. Hopefully we're going to see more of that in the midterms.
Yeah, I'm optimistic too. I do think things are changing. I think that demographic is becoming more active. I mean, those questions still remain unanswered. People still don't know who their elected officials are, but quite frankly, most adults don't know either. And
good
so
point.
I think that the younger people like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez being elected and others like her are helping create superstars that are closer to their age that they can relate to. I think that's part of the problem, is that how can you expect someone who's 18, 19, 20, 21 to relate to someone who is 70, 80 years old?
Well, they're related to Bernie.
Yeah.
This is true.
He's the anomaly.
Right.
But they would love to tap into that.
Although
that
they relate to him, but there again, I mean, we saw it in the primary, but now there isn't as much as far as the momentum of getting, again, same problem, getting people out to actually vote.
You know, the Bernie thing is complex. It really is. And I don't really know what he's done to capitalize on what he could do in terms of getting out the vote.
It was an anti-establishment message that he had.
And I am a Bernie voter. I'll tell you that right now.
They related to his message, I think. It was the message.
Yeah, sure.
Just
absolutely.
The continual pounding away of the inequality message that, right. that they connected to.
Which is what Trump did
yep.
as well. It was a message that that ignited voters.
It hit the core.
Hit the core.
Yep.
And Oliver says, protest arrests. Being arrested hardly qualifies as breaking any laws. Conversely, there are those who break laws, including many government officials wielding the trappings of their office, who failed to be arrested. And ironically, in certain circumstances, there are law enforcement officers who are breaking the law by the very act of making an arrest, hence wrongful arrests. Also, keep in mind, the laws themselves can be unlawful under the Constitution, the supposedly highest law in the land. That's from Oliver. All right, and then one more here. And that comes from Joanne, who says about Roe v. Wade. Dear panel, I think you are missing an important point. If we had universal health care, we wouldn't need to be relying on abortions for unwanted pregnancies. All women would have access to birth control pills and other methods that control when or if a woman gets pregnant. And that's from Joanne. But, Joanne, here's the problem. It isn't that these folks who are in control right now are going to allow for birth control pills or anything else, or the morning after pill. They're going to say that's illegal too. So,
and as you noted, rape. There are other times when those situations of pills and other stuff don't always play into it. Don't always help.
And this Supreme Court moving in such a conservative direction is not good for the likelihood of getting anything related to universal health care passed.
Right.
They're going to want to overturn the ACA. This is not a court that's going to look fondly on any type of universal health care.
In fact, the one guy on that court right now who offers the slightest bit of promise is John Roberts.
As we speak, the Trump administration this weekend allowed for billions of dollars, I think it's $10 billion, right, to be withheld to insurance companies.
Right.
Which is going to make it very difficult for the idea is that this would be money that would go to for insurers that would pay for those who have the least health issues to pay for those with the greatest health issues, which was what the whole idea of Affordable Care Act was all about.
Yeah, they don't need the courts to really help them at this point. They're doing plenty of damage themselves in terms of Trump and the Republican Party.
So we'll see premiums go up.
Again, why the midterm election is so important, because if we really do want to have health care issued in such a way that's universal, it's going to take Democrats to do it, and Democrats need to get some power, and they don't have that right now.
Well, we also saw the withholding of the breastfeeding endorsement as well, which was absolutely mind-boggling why we would stand on our own outside the international community, saying that this one thing we shouldn't do.
Well, and the other, and this gets back to Barry's point earlier that guys make the laws.
Right. Yeah. Right. That's the unfortunate reality.
Very unfortunate.
That's slowly changing too, but hopefully it will pick up speed in the near future.
So let's move on. We just have about 5 or 6 minutes left. So we'll go to the issue of the president going to Europe. Worried to meet with worried NATO heads, and then how do you what's the grand finale? A conversation with Vladimir Putin. With the established global order on shaky footing, President Donald Trump's week-long trip to Europe will test already strained bonds with some of the U.S.'s closest allies, then put him face-to-face with the leader of the country whose electoral influence and interference was meant to help put him in office. He departs tomorrow on a four-nation tour amid simmering disputes over trade and military spending with fellow Western democracies and speculation about whether he will rebuke or embrace Russian President Vladimir Putin. There seems to be little evidence that he will rebuke.
Seems to be the case.
If you're Merkel and you got to be shaking your head wondering, as we just talked about, people who sit in the Oval Office with the president, why am I, this is an act of futility. He's going to talk with NATO leaders, and he has no regard for NATO leaders. And then he's going to go to England, and there's no regard there. Then he'll play golf in Scotland. And then he's going to go to
at his own
golf course.
Right.
And then he's going to Helsinki, and he's going to meet with his friend Vladimir. I mean, this is a week that you're kind of shaking your head going, and nothing's going to come out of this, only the concern as to what he is going to be talking with Putin about.
But again, this comes back to having this chaos form of diplomacy. And we saw what was happening right now with tariffs. We saw what was happening with just general communication with our allies, our longest standing allies here. And this is where you really start seeing America recede off the world stage.
Because they can't trust him, because they don't know whatever agreement they think they may have with him, which is what happened the last time when he was talking with these leaders, is he gets on the plane and suddenly whatever they thought they had an agreement right. with is gone.
It's an embarrassment to our country. It just continues to isolate us. He seems to only want to have conversation with dictators.
Right.
He seems to have no interest in having conversation with anybody who has any vested interest in helping us. It's got to always be about him. You know, that's his biggest problem, is that if it's not about me, if the spotlight isn't focused on me, I can't take it. And you're going to see that, as we saw last time, when he goes to this NATO meeting. I'm sure we're going to see videos and images again of him trying to weasel his way into the front of the line so he can be at the front of the crowd. And it just sets a bad, I think, precedent and a bad example for our young people and for our country. And if you look at what's happening in Great Britain right now, you're seeing a country that has made a decision to try to stand on its own, and they're having real difficulty figuring out how to do that all of a sudden. And I fear that we are going to be in the same boat very soon.
Well, the secretary that was in charge of the Brexit process actually just stepped down over the weekend as well.
Right.
So you have that issue. But going back to the point of this, that we look at all the different fronts. The president can't keep on fighting battles domestically and internationally on different fronts, economically, militaristically. And this is where you start seeing not just, issues for one year, but truly for generations, our children's children.
Yeah, it's scary. And the fact that this is coming off of after nominating a Supreme Court justice, it's a pretty terrifying time for us. And the American people need to step up and pay attention, because we're going to find ourselves literally on an island very soon. And no one's going to come to our rescue when we need it.
Right.
All right, we are just about out of time. Will you come back?
Absolutely.
Do we scare you, or are you good? You're okay?
No, this was fun.
All right. It was nothing.
No, I enjoyed it. Thank you for having me.
No reason to bag out. Okay, good. Excellent.
Not yet.
Obviously, we'll have a lot to talk about tomorrow. Anybody want to take a guess on the Supreme Court?
I must say Hardiman. That's what I'm going to go with.
That's what I'm going with.
That would be the choice I would go with at the moment.
Yeah.
The anti-Ivy League taxi driver.
That'll be the narrative.
It seems that seems, and also the guy who probably can get through the Senate the easiest. Or the person, I shouldn't say the guy, but the person.
Joe, I'll ask you this quick follow-up question. Again, this is like a Vegas odds question, but when do you think the news will break? I mean, so they're trying to keep it a secret. So at what point will the news break?
Oh, boy.
Because with Gorsuch, it was only like a half hour before.
Yeah. I'll probably say 8:05.
8:05. Yeah. All right. Okay.
I'm going to do TBS time. Yeah. 8:05.
Yeah. Because I think the last time they found it with Gorsuch was they followed his wife, right? I think that was how they figured it out. So.
But didn't they bring the other?
Yeah.
So that's what, right. This is Trump said.
But you have to give enough time for Trump to give the rose backstage.
But Trump will make sure that everybody is there it doesn't look like. Who didn't show up?
If he could roll them out on a float with confetti cannons, that would be his
like
ideal
Miss
scenario.
USA. Right.
This only whole thing. If he was on the float.
Oh, yeah. He
with
would
them.
Have to be on the float, obviously. Yeah. Right. I'm going to go.
Kind of like the Rocky movie.
Exactly. Like
Apollo Creed.
Poor Apollo Creed.
I think it's going to leak out before 8 o'clock. I think it's going to leak out this afternoon at some point in time. I think he's just not going to be able to resist it.
I know now I'm just being guessing. A conspiracy theorist, but if it leaked out, then he could change his mind. Then he could have time to change his mind.
But exactly.
That's
he loves
absolutely
that,
right.
right. He right. loves this whole game.
I know.
Yeah, it's a game show for him.
I know.
And it's our life.
Right. Thank you all very much for being with us. Alan Chartok, Joe Bonilla, Barry Lewis, and Terry Gibson. We'll see you soon.
Thank you.
Excellent. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.